you to everyone for joining. Maybe we should go ahead and start the recording. So this is the
BC. We're going to start it, Elisa.
Yeah, okay, great. So welcome to the BC meeting, which is being held today, which is Tuesday, April 9th in Beijing at 1:15. And we've got a pretty full agenda today, so why don't we dive right in? But before we do that, and I know we did this very, very quickly, but maybe we could just take a moment to just say a couple sentences about who you are and what your interest in the BC is. And I'll start off. My name is Elisa Cooper, and most of you know that I'm the chair of the business constituency. But my day job is working at Mark Monitor, where I'm a product marketing director. And my real interest is in helping really our clients to understand and to know what is going on at ICANN.
Steve Del Bianco. I'm with NetChoice. I'm executive director of a trade association in the USA on e-commerce issues. And on the BC, for several years, have served as the vice chair for policy coordination, which is trying to keep us together with respect to supporting the counselors, making comments at the microphone, and then helping to coordinate our written comments to ICANN.
Chris Chaplow. I've been a BC member since the Paris meeting in 2008. Elected Vice Chair, Finance and Operations, and that's, as I often say, it's the engine room working on the budgets and the outreach materials and things like that. So I'll pass on. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Amy Mushawar. I'm a privacy and data security attorney at Ballard Spahr, and I represent the Association of National Advertisers.
Hi, I'm Liz Sweezy from Fairwinds Partners, and I represent, or my company, Fairwinds, represents corporate brand owners, particularly and most recently with submitting applications for GTLDs and also protecting their brands and the new GTLDs as well.
Martin Sutton from HSBC, BC member, credentials committee. Can't remember how long I've been on the BC. I'm also an applicant for new GTLD and a founding member of the Brand Registry Group.
Hi, I am Mahmoud Latouf from TAGI. This is my first BC meeting. I'm happy to be here. I'm really looking forward to learn more about TMCH, new GTLDs, and its impact on the businesses in general.
Hi, I'm David Sneed. I am the vice chair and co-founder of the Internet Infrastructure Coalition. It's a advocacy group for web hosts and data centers that's in the U.S. And I'm not a member of. We're not a member of any constituency. We're trying to figure out which constituency wants us.
Hi, my name is Linda Valter. I'm with Lakeshore Entertainment. We're a film production company, so obviously interested in IPR rights. So I apologize beforehand because I have to leave early for the IPC, but interested to learn what the business constituency is up to with that regard as well. Thanks.
I'm Dan York with a project of the Internet Society focused on deploying IPv6 and DNSSEC, and part of our outreach is to businesses, and so I was coming here partly just to understand what this constituency did here, and in another hat, I'm also advising some different companies around interactions with TLDs, so I'm curious to hear more about that.
Aisha Hassan with the International Chamber of Commerce, long-term BC member. Our organization represents businesses from around the world and across sectors, so many of my member companies are BC members, but they also are members of the other CSG constituencies, and a few of them are in the contracted party house as well. Thank you.
This is Gabriela Slack from Latin American E-Commerce Institute. Our institute works mostly on building trust on the digital economy and enabling e-commerce and helping to bring also more awareness about the new GTLDs. And if you open the newsletter of the BC, you can find an article about what we're doing, particularly regarding new GTLDs and everything related to awareness. Also, I just wanted to thank everyone, because I don't know if you know that I'm now one of the local projects. How is the name? Leaders, Local Leader Project. So that means that I will get some support because I'm the only Latin American member. So thank you very much for that.
Hi, everyone. I'm Aparna Sridhar. I'm with Google, and I focus on broader internet governance issues. So if you have questions about GTLDs, you should talk to Andy Abrams because that's his wheelhouse.
I'm Mary Jo Kuklar. I represent Name Administration, and that's why I'm here.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Wolf. I am the NOMCOM appointee to the GNSO, so that's why I'm here, is to listen and learn what's happening in this constituency today. I'm also an IP lawyer and run a digital brand strategy consulting firm.
Hello, Javier Sariñá, Telefónica. I'm here representing my company and interested mainly in GTLDs matters as and also in general internet governance.
And I'm Karen Law, and I'm representing Alibaba Group, and I'm the IP counsel for Alibaba Group, and I'm interested in anything which is IP or new GTLDs, all sort of things. And I think this is the second BC meetings that I'm attending, and we are in the progress of becoming BC members, and that's why I'm here.
Just walking in is John Berard, who's a very important member, as he is a GNSO counselor. Sorry to ambush you. We were just kind of going around saying a few words about who we are and kind of why we participate at ICANN and what our interest is in the BC in particular.
Yes, my name is John Berard. I'm a public relations consultant based in San Francisco, California. I've been involved in ICANN Matters since 2003 and find the BC to be the best place for me to participate because it is focused on the Internet as a business platform, making sure that the policies, practices, and procedures of the organization are conducive to that, stretching from the trust and safety of registrants all the way through to the ability to create and expand business on the strength of the digital platform.
Thanks, John. Zahid, maybe you can do the same quickly.
Okay. Mike. Hi, Zahid Jamil. I'm a member of the BC, technically through the Domain Name Dispute Resolution Center in Pakistan. I'm an attorney, and I participate in the BC and eventually got elected as counselor. I've been doing that for the last, I think now, 4.5 years or so, and representing you on the council. So I feel that the BC presents the best way for me to be able to participate in ICANN because I share the same values as business and commercial concerns. So that's why. Thank you.
So I know we have some more people kind of coming in. But I do want to be cognizant of the agenda. But one thing I would like to say to just preface this meeting, as you can see, there is a wide variety of talent and experience and expertise here. And I would like to try to keep this meeting somewhat interactive and conversational. And I really want to encourage people to ask questions, even if you think maybe it doesn't make sense or you've got a question, what is an acronym? I'm going to make an effort not to use the acronyms today. I really want this to be a session where you walk away feeling like you've learned something. So, please help me to make that happen. So, we're going to kick it off. Before we do that, let Marilyn Cade introduce herself as well.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, we were just doing.
Sorry, that. My name is Marilyn Cade, and I'm the CSG representative for the business constituency, which basically, for some of you, I am using an acronym. That's the Commercial Stakeholder Group. And the purpose of that role is to work with the other constituencies and with other groups in support of the BC's agenda. Thanks.
All right, so let's jump in. Liz Sweezy from Fairwinds Partners has graciously agreed to provide us with a bit of an overview of what she's hearing from her clients in terms of getting ready for new GTLDs, a trademark clearinghouse, and I thought it would be a great opportunity for Liz to kind of share with us what she's hearing and then for us to also have some discussion about it. So, Liz, take it away. Benny, I think Benny's popping the slides up.
Wonderful, right now. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Liz Sweezy from Fairwinds. Thank you, Elisa. You'll have to forgive me. I don't do public speaking well, and I've also been up since 2 o'clock this morning. So please, you know, definitely feel free to participate in discussions and ask questions. We have a great many experts in the room, so hopefully I won't be the only one talking here. So for the most part, it does say the agenda said new GTLD update, and I took that as for this particular group as a discussion of the trademark clearinghouse. So as requested, I've divided up the presentation into three parts, dealing with the trademark clearinghouse. Sorry, it says TMCH in some of the parts, but I will try to use the non-acronym.
That's okay.
TMCH, got it. Planning for registry launches and policing for abuse. Someone pointed out on the BC thread that everyone pretty much knows what the TMCH is by now and what it does. So my points will be more about what I'm seeing from my clients and definitely open up for discussion. First slide, please. Thank you. So dealing with the TMCH, at least initially, most of our clients are approaching it very conservatively. But, you know, of course, there are some that aren't as well. We have a large retail corporation that we work with who is planning to submit 50 marks. A global bank is submitting less than 20, and an international food service company is submitting less than 10. So we're really seeing, you know, the numbers across the board. But for the most part, people are proceeding with caution and definitely taking this wait-and-see approach. A more risk-averse company concerned about its presence in IDNs will most likely file their trademarks early because the IDNs are going to go first, as most of you know. Do we have to use them? Okay, thank you. So the 30-day notice requirement for the sunrise periods allows brands to register trademarks as needed. So as I mentioned earlier, if a company feels like it needs to register IDNs, register domain names and IDNs, then they will probably go first. For a smaller company that's not so concerned about IDNs and that's maybe primarily based in the U.S., they can probably wait a little bit longer. Just depends on their preference. The 30-day notice requirement of sunrise periods brands are primarily looking at the TMCH as a means to register in the sunrise period as opposed to using the trademark claims period, which... I think it's 90 days now. 90 days where, so I'm going to assume that most of you don't know the trademark claims period. Is that a fair assessment? So that allows trademark owners, when a registrant goes to register a domain name in a registry where the trademark is registered, the trademark holder will receive a notice. And that can be found. I don't have that in my slides. I probably should have added it. But you can find that on the ICANN website as well, what that looks like. Next slide, please. Planning for registry launches. Before registry launches, it's critical, and we think that it's critical, for brands to have a defined domain name policy and strategy in order to define which names to register. So we've actually found that a lot of companies have a lot of success when they put together what we have seen called as a domain name council, stakeholders including people from the IT group, the marketing group, e-commerce, and legal. I have in the deck develop a plan for second-level registrations as sunrise periods begin. It should instead say that a strategy should be in place before the sunrise periods begin, in my opinion. This strategy should be flexible and account for the new GTLDs that are coming up and be ready to register selected marks during the relevant sunrise periods. Next slide, please. Policing for abuse. Now, this is my favorite part of the TMCH so far, or the rights protections mechanism so far. The Uniform Rapid Suspension, the URS, was designed as a quicker and more cost-effective way than the UDRP for new GTLDs. It's a lot cheaper. It's going to be between $300 and $500 to take down a site, as opposed to $1,000 to sometimes $3,000, depending on who you're having do your UDRPs. So it's a much cheaper option. It takes between 2 to 4 weeks, as opposed to about 2 months, to get the name taken down. And instead of a domain name transfer where the brand owner has to maintain it in order to protect it, there's a placeholder, URS page. So if it's something that you're not terribly concerned with, but you'd rather someone not own, third party own the domain name, it puts up a placeholder. So you never have to, you don't have to register it and you don't have to maintain it in your portfolio. We work with a lot of companies who have very large portfolios that are basically, and for the most part, defensive registrations based on, you know, a domain name that maybe their CEO stumbled upon one night, late at night, sent an email to their trademark group and said, please go after this. I don't want this out there. It's just a cheaper, more cost-effective, and faster way to take care of that. And the URS will be operational before the first GTLD launch, so we've been told. And the UDRP will still be an option. Oh, yep, sorry.
Sorry, Chris Chopper, to make it interactive. I've got a question. You've mentioned the placeholder page.
Yes.
Does that remain until the end of the domain is registered?
Yes.
At which point the domain then becomes free?
Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. Okay. So it's not a permanent solution, but it, you know, it does take it off the market for a little while, I guess, so to speak. And I think that about closes it.
So how many what percentage of companies are you finding are actually getting prepared?
I would say about half of our clients are prepared. We've helped them put together lists of trademarks that they want to file in the Trademark Clearinghouse, but also the second level as well. That's all the second level. But figuring out which GTLDs they're going to register in, and then which second level they're going to register in what, in each GTLD.
So you'd say like half of.
I would say about 50%. Yes.
50%. Wow.
Which may seem like a lot, but I feel like the time is kind of coming more. It's coming fast, and more companies definitely need to be aware and prepared.
Welcome questions, but how are companies getting ready for the IDNs?
We actually don't work with a lot of companies that are going to register any IDNs off the bat. So we haven't seen that. And I would love to open it up to, you know, anyone in the room and to ask for their strategy and what they think about IDNs. Anyone? Pardon? Oh, no, I don't. Mm-mm. Sorry, I don't know anything.
I think the IDNs will cause a lot of problems for a lot of people. Ram Mohan mentioned yesterday that when someone like in the US receives an email with an IDN domain name and he wants to reply to that email or to forward or to deal with that, there will be causing a lot of problems because our keyboards are not really equipped with
right.
different scripts. And you have to deal with different scripts. There's a lot of scripts around the world. So this will cause a lot of problems in stability as well as for brands as well, trademark issues as well. So I'm not sure who are dealing with these issues, but we have to keep an eye on these issues, actually.
It's Marilyn Cade. You know, we may not have an answer here, but Zodiac is speaking on Thursday morning, and they are around, and it might be if we have enough interest, Elisa, that we could grab Pam Little for further conversation. Some of you know that Pam Little, formerly with some of us know her because she was formerly with ICANN, and she's a consultant now to Zodiac, and they've applied for the majority of the Chinese character strings, and she has quite a bit of expertise, so if there's enough interest, you might.
I know one of the issues that I've heard from Mark Monitor clients is that they just don't know what they want to register. They have a hard time figuring out even which Chinese trademarks or whatever language script it's in, which ones are the important ones. And it has more to do with sort of figuring out what it is that they really want to prioritize. Any other questions or topics or things that people want to talk about related to sort of the new GTLDs? Chris.
Just a comment. It's not IDNs. I've got a couple of web design clients that are interested in the trademark clearinghouse. But most of my environment is small business. And it is an option that I'm recommending for smaller businesses that aren't sort of worldwide marks that are really under attack all the time, is simply to wait and then register within the first few days of general availability, which I think has got to be a strategic option.
Martin Sutton, HSBC. Just trying to think of what might be the sort of drivers to get people to use the trademark clearinghouse early on, and sort of what advantages do you think that there is in doing it now? The reason I ask that is it's fairly well untested. We haven't had any new TLDs launched yet. Delays are inherent in the whole program, so it's not to say that there'll be no further delays. So when do you start being charged for the items going into the trademark clearinghouse? Mm-hmm. Is one of my questions, which says, is that still a deterrent? There was one other... leave it that one, first of all, if you've got any other drivers to encourage people onto it.
So your ultimate question is, what are the drivers to register early? I can't say that there are drivers to register early. I think that it's I think the wait and see approach is certainly not a bad one. Steve, did you want to chime in there?
If someone wants to take advantage of something the business constituency really fought for, it was the notion of adding dozens of extra strings that you've had to previously fight for and because they were abusively registered or used. And they call it the 50-plus for short. But that process is so new. We had asked for it for a couple of years, but it was just granted a little over a month ago. There's very little published yet by ICANN staff on how it will work. But the hope is that all the companies in this room and the clients of the attorneys in the room would quickly prepare those lists. And it's not just from previous UDRPs. It could be from previous court proceedings where your customers were being defrauded by someone who pretended to be PayPal by spelling it PAYPA1 as an example. That's not a trademark. That's not an exact match. So how do we get people to add those strings in? Because that's part of the system we are proposing. That's going to be a huge benefit to registrants.
Can I just respond quickly to that? I'm not saying that it's not worthwhile doing. It's the when. What's the encouragement now to get your brands into the TMCH?
So it's Marilyn. I'm going to make two points, and I think everyone realizes that all of these meetings are being transcribed and are publicly available to everyone to read, just as all of the meetings yesterday were publicly transcribed. So even if you weren't in the room, you might have seen, for instance, that there was a particular workshop between a couple of groups who were interested in trying to undertake opposing moving forward with the 50-plus and seeing if it could still be struck out. So I just mentioned that as something for us to think about in terms of we fought pretty hard based on information that we had and based on public comments. I see Amy sitting here. Based on public comments that came from groups that were not directly inside the constituencies, trying to come up with reasonable improvements to the RPMs. I'm wondering if maybe this might be an area where we need to do a little more quick examination to make sure that we understand how these things are going to be used, and if there's going to be slow take-up, we have some good understanding of it so we can articulate it?
I think, as far as I understand, one of the advantages of going on now is that you get them logged into the system, you know that they're there, and you don't actually get charged until the first TLDs get launched. So, so I think that's one area just to bear in mind, that it's not having to pay now and then wait.
Of course, I'll jump into the queue here. I don't know if the fact that .jobs is going to start using the Trademark Clearinghouse will somehow somehow trigger.
No.
It will not.
No.
Okay.
No. I asked that question.
Okay. So it will not. But just to add on to Martin, what Martin is saying, and you know, and I think everybody knows I work for Mark Monitor. We are a corporate registrar. So let me preface this by saying that. But to what Martin just said, I think, you know, registrars would say and agents of the clearinghouse would say to submit early because you're going to probably have your hands full trying to figure out what to register with, you know, the first registries possibly launching in the middle of this year within just the next few months. So to sort of take this off your plate, and also plus the fact that, you know, you wouldn't be charged until the first registry launches. Again, I work for a registrar, so, you know, of course, I guess take what I'm saying with a grain of salt. Yeah. I'm sorry. I think Susan wanted to say something, and then, okay.
So I would think.
So I would think if you had a huge trademark portfolio, then it would be easier just to start getting them in. I am going to wait probably to the last minute, because, you know, we have two basic trademarks to protect. It's not that I'm going to enter two in there and that's it, but I just don't have the scale of trademark.
Yeah.
So.
Just a newbie question as far as the 50-plus strings that you were mentioning there. Is there an additional cost to that associated with that? How does that work in this situation, or do we not know?
I don't know. I don't know. I think what I had heard, it's like some nominal additional fee, and the previously abused registrations are associated to a validated trademark in the clearinghouse. So the trademark has been validated, and then my understanding is that you would go back the way it's written. It's validated mark, so that you would go back and add those, but that hasn't been defined, and the technical requirements for how that will all work have not been provided to anyone, and so we'll just have to wait and see how that works.
This is not confirmed, obviously.
Liz, I'm sorry. Can you please say your name just for the record?
It was Dan York.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Somewhere along the lines, I have heard, and this is not confirmed, so just, again, take it with a grain of salt. I've heard $30, but, again, just don't hold me to that, but that's something that I have heard.
Any other questions or comments or thoughts on Trademark Clearinghouse or new GTLDs or getting ready or anything around this? Marilyn.
Marilyn Cade. I'm thinking that we'll want to maybe communicate about this issue after we see the GAC communique. I think everybody pretty much has a sense that there'll be just a very short list of absolute consensus objections. That'll be less than 10, and possibly around the around 5 to 6 is what, you know, kind of absolute no's. But there'll be categories of objections, and then the board will have to decide what they're going to do with those categories. And that may also have a big impact on the scheduled rollout, depending on whether there's particular complexity. One of the categories is dealing with different regulated industries. So, you know, I just wanted to park that for us to maybe think about, because that may actually completely change the cycle of which names are able to, what numbers are able to go through. And the board may say, thank you very much, GAC. See ya. which I wouldn't advise myself. But the board may also, you know, say, okay, now we have to have some kind of public comment process on what kinds of approach should be taken in certain sectors.
All right. Well, thank you, Liz. That was great. I really appreciate that. Next up, we've got Susan Kawaguchi, who is going to give us a update on, I probably shouldn't call it Who Is. I should probably call it TLD Directory Services. But before she does that, I think she's got also a special announcement. Yes.
I always forget this thing. I'm Susan Kawaguchi. I work for Facebook. I am seeming to always focus on Who Is issues because it's the bane of my job. So I spent a year and a half on the Who Is review team, which then they sort of, the board sort of said, yeah, good recommendations. Yeah, we'll just put them over here. We won't do much. And then they established the expert working group, and for whatever reason, I applied, and they selected me. So we are now not calling it.
Excuse me just a moment. Remember that talking in the back halls to everybody? Why do you think they selected her? It's because she's so great.
I do have an opinion on Who Is, at least. So I am now participating on the expert working group for the new directory services, and so there's a lot of different things we call the record associated with the domain registration. And we've met in L.A., London, here in Beijing, and we're heading to New York in May. So this was supposed to be a 90-day commitment. It's now looking like a year. So we'll see. So obviously for this group, what we really I feel is this the most important to keep pounding on with the rest of the team, who's comes from all different parts of ICANN, and is that we need an open, accurate, available Who Is. We need a proxy registration. I mean, I use them myself, but that needs to be regulated and have processes in place. We need to stop the bad guys from using domain names and the Who Is record as if it's their playground. So we have a few challenges. I don't know if you were in the presentation that the EWG did yesterday in the Grand Hall, I guess it was, but there's definitely members of the team that want anonymous registrations. That doesn't work. And they also want tiered access. That doesn't work. So my point of view is that each consumer, never mind the trademark owners, but each consumer needs to know who they're doing business with on the Internet, and that's what I'm going to stick with. So it will be open, accurate, and available, or it'll kill me, one of the two. I'm not sure. So we're going to keep moving forward. We have the firm backing of FADI on this, and Chris Despain and Steve Crocker, both members of the board, are on the team also. And we're not just looking at the current Who Is. We're looking at what should it be and trying to reinvent it, reimagine it. So if you have any ideas or concerns, SusanK@FB.com. I'd always love your input. And, you know, I'll take any questions here, anything I didn't cover.
I'll ask a question while the mic is traveling. So what will be the outcome? Like what will, so you guys will come up with these recommendations?
Mm-hmm.
What will happen?
So we're not calling it a recommendation. It's a blueprint. We should have a blueprint by, because straw man is way too weighted of a term at this point in ICANN. So we will have a blueprint, and hopefully we'll, and what that, what we're really aiming for is a design, maybe not the technical aspects, but a fully thought out design of the who is, with references to policies and as much detail as possible. And then that goes to the PDP process. The GNSO will take it from there. But Fadi has guaranteed that we will have a the ability to say, wait, you're off on the wrong track, or you are taking too long, speed it up. And so that this will be, it's going to be, it's still going to be years. This is just too big of a change, but we don't want it to be 10 years. We want it to be 3 to 5 of actual implementation. So, and that's pretty aggressive for ICANN.
John.
John Berard. Susan, in the directory services session that Chris led with you guys yesterday, he left the impression that tiered access was not a foregone conclusion, one way or the other. But I get a sense from you that it might be, or is that your position and it has not yet, there hasn't yet been a consensus on that?
There hasn't been a consensus on anything. We've done a lot of discussion. That is my point of view, that tiered access of the current information that's shown in the directory services, you know, I'm talking about the registrant contact and all of that. What we see in a WHOIS record now, that should be open and available. That's my position, and I'm going to sort of stick the stake in the ground on that one. There's definitely others in the group that think it should be very, very limited. I think we can work through that. But if we include additional information that's not already included in the WHOIS record, that depending on what we add, that might make sense to be tiered. You know,
and on the basis of the request from law enforcement and the multiple factor validation, it's likely that there will be more information in the directory services than exists in the current WHOIS record, eh?
Well, because there is a lot more information currently collected by the registrar, so would that be, the question is, should that be included? Mm-hmm. I mean, there, you can understand a credit card is very, very controversial. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was going to ask a couple of questions, but let me make a statement. In the interest of disclosure, my name is Marilyn Cade. That isn't the disclosure. Everyone, I chaired the first WHOIS task force at ICANN for 2 years. And we met for more than 12 months of that time, twice a week, 2 hours a day. We did a survey. We did a survey. We had over 30 people in the working group. We did a survey of users of WHOIS. It's still available and out there. And I suspect if we did the same survey today, we would find pretty much the same results, but on steroids. And the reason I mention it is there's all this other work going on within ICANN, which has proven and proven and proven that there are that WHOIS is a resource to use in helping to address fraud and abuse and attacks to the network and other kinds of problems. And yet we continue to find ourselves struggling with some misunderstandings or disagreements about what the rationale is to provide this information for particular uses. But we have never, in the time that I have been involved in WHOIS, which would be, since ICANN's 15 years old, that would be 17 years. We have never asked to have credit card information made publicly available.
That's not something I asked.
I know. I just wanted to mention that. But what I really wanted to go back to is there was a meeting between law enforcement and the GAC. I wasn't able to stay in the entirety of it. I don't know if anybody else was. But I think we may want to put on our agenda, making sure we, if there is a transcript, making sure we look at the transcript or catching up on that issue. The second point, of course, is for some of the governments, we're struggling with the confusion about whether this is personally identifiable information and therefore should not be displayed due to data privacy laws. My own focus would not be on the Europeans on that issue, but maybe making sure that if we need to do an informational approach, we address some of the Latin American countries and the African countries to explain what our rationale is for making this data open and available, because I suspect we're going to have to deal with GAC input on this too. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Marie. Oh.
Is it working? Yeah, it is working. Thank you, Marie Patello, for the record. Susan, going back to yesterday's hearing, for want of a better term, a couple of points, if I may. Firstly, they talked about there being a cost for access to data. What I've got written down here is it didn't seem to be controversial, because what I remember is nobody actually made a comment. Could you expand a bit on that? And the second point is something that I find extremely concerning. This is not a direct quote. This is me typing. I won't say who said it, but those of you who are there will know. CCTLDs are more competitive if they don't have strict accuracy and residency data. Who is data today is abused by parties who think they have the right to the data. I find that really worrying and a bit bizarre. Could you comment on that for me as well, please? Thank you.
So remind me what the first one is, because the second one just makes me so crazy.
Yeah. I thought I was talking quite calmly when I said it. Mm-hmm. Should there be a cost for access to the data? It was on one of the slides, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we were asking about that. My viewpoint's no, and I would fight hard against that. I do think there may be a reason to have some sort of gating of the data so that we don't necessarily know who is getting the data, because that could be a problem. But we know how many records are accessed at a time.
Like, is it 5 or is it 5,000?
Right. And so what is happening with this data? And maybe it wouldn't be such available in 5,000 records.
Right.
So there should be some gating. But in my opinion, the cost of the whois should be associated, or with the directory service, should be associated with the domain registration. Let's make the domain registration cost a dollar more. And you'd have a fewer registrations, which would be fine with me, because right now I've got 80,000 targets with, you know, domain names. We have 2,200 domains in our portfolio. We have a very small portfolio for a company, but I've got 80,000 targets of domains that I need to review and decide if they're infringing and that I need to take an action on. So that's a huge disparity, in my opinion, and that's just what I know about. So on the other, I think what he was saying, and that was Elliot Noss, if I remember, and I will say his name.
Good to know.
That he's wrong. If you look at CCTLD data, my experience, it's much more, it's not always accurate, but it's closer to being accurate, because they ask for validated information to start. I have sent my passport or my driver's license all around the world to get registrations, and nobody's complaining about me doing that. You know, if my company wants it, they don't want my company information. They want who's signing. So I have to provide personal information. So let's get all those privacy people out there registering CCTLDs and see what they think. So,
you know, and actually I put together a report that I'm going to share with our working group that shows that that's pretty well just false. So. No.
Any other comments or questions?
No, I wouldn't have been on the group.
Well, thank you so much, Susan. We really appreciate all the work you do. All right. Next up, Martin Sutton to talk about the brands. Okay. I think Benny has your slides. So, Benny, if you can pull up Martin's deck. And I think she's getting it up there.
I think there's quite a lot of opportunities already where the full deck of slides has been revealed. So I think the majority of BC members have seen this either in the GAC meeting or the preceding CSG meeting. So I'm not going to center too much around the slides. I'm just going to pick out a few of these just to tease out the important elements and then really open it up to Q&A and interaction. If we could go to, I think, a couple of slides in, or slide four. That's it. So, essentially, so many years ago, I've been working in the BC and other parts of ICANN looking at issues of brand abuse, of fraud, trying to minimize e-crime, and worked on the registration abuse policy working group and things like that. So you know, I'm familiar with the side of the fence which says protect our consumers, and always looked over the fence at the contracted parties. Now I've got to merge with those parties, and so a number of brands that have applied for a top level domain with valid reasons and good ideas, and the strength of this is really about a trusted model for our consumers, is that we now have to work out a way of working within this ICANN environment as it is, and also bearing in mind that there could be some restructuring as we go forward. So we've got to balance quite a lot of, or juggle quite a lot of information and ideas at the moment. So let me just try and make sure that it's clear as to what we are and why particularly we are different to the existing models, the registry models that we see here in the dot-coms world. Key points are that we are the owner of the brand that is being registered at the top level into the root. So we have a trademark, it's our business. That's us for a start. The business that we actually undertake is not typically registry business. This is like a dot on the radar that keeps beeping occasionally amongst many, many, many other dots that appear on the radar. So from a HSBC perspective, you know, a new GTLD is a very, very small part of our overall business. You may occasionally just see it bleep on the radar screen. Because our business is not the internet. But we put our business through the internet, and this is where it's much useful for us and other brands to go forward and apply. The other aspect here is that we will not be selling domains. So the traditional open commercial model is volume-driven domains for third parties. So the security element, the control element, rests very well within a branded TLD and is an advantage then for any consumers that are wanting to find the right home when they're trying to find your services, whether it's luxury goods, whether it's financial services. They know where they're going to go. Could we go to the next slide, please? Thanks, Benny. I think just to make it abundantly clear here, at this stage, we're not including the brand generics that have been applied for at this stage. That's a distraction at this time, and there's lots of wider debates about that. So the group that we're talking about here, the brand registry group, is concentrating on those brand TLDs only, not the generics that have been applied for brands. Thanks, Benny. I need to move on a few slides, I think. I'll tell you when to stop. Okay, thank you there. One of the major areas now that we need to set up and organise ourselves as a group and interact with ICANN is because prior to becoming a registry, there's lots of issues ahead of us, even before we sign an agreement with ICANN, because there are a variety of areas that don't really apply to our model, or we are a completely different risk, so we need to approach it differently. Our organisations are can be very large, and international, and we have all sorts of regulators crawling over us. So to then allow ICANN to drop in at short notice, it's not really going to happen. But we've got to expect, some ways to work through these aspects with ICANN, and rather than look at it individually as a one-to-one process, it's going to be far more easier if we can come together as like-minded and in a situation where we can actually think together what are the key components of the registry agreement that obviously keeps changing every 5 minutes at the moment, but we're trying to battle with that in terms of making sure that the brand registries do get a say now to make sure it makes ICANN's life easier. It certainly should make our lives easier and minimise the amount of negotiations, individual negotiations that could take place as we go through the application process. Now, when I mentioned earlier that, I've been involved at ICANN very much in terms of the consumer protection element. We fought for a lot, and a lot of things have changed for good, and we've got lots of things we got into the applicant guidebook to create the safeguards for consumers. Now, within a brand registry, those risks are very different. And because we're not selling to third parties any domains, we're controlling that environment. It's a trusted environment. So some of these things aren't going to really apply in that model. Nevertheless, we've got to work those things through, and that's where probably we're going to have some divergence as we go through the next few months from where I previously was concentrating on from a BC perspective. Thanks. Can you move the slide on, please, Benny? So what we're working at the moment, and there's masses of work going on already. 7 o'clock this morning, we had three members working on the negotiation team with ICANN, with the registries that exist already, with the new registries that may be involved in NTAG, but are, again, more open commercial varieties. So we had three members sat around the table this morning with them to make sure that there is recognised that we need to concentrate on creating a brand template for the contract. Could you move on, please, Benny? And then after we're delegated, I think it's very important then that we maintain that level of input, because we're going to have to consider some of the policy and processes that are going to impact us as running our registry, and we don't want to have onerous issues, onerous cost, and if items are not relevant for our type of model that we're running. So it will be key for us to make sure that we have a say going forward. And currently we're still in the throes of creating the formal organisation as a not-for-profit. We are engaged with ICANN in terms of setting up a constituency within the registry stakeholder group. So this is early days in that process. We're working that through in terms of understanding what are the steps, what do we need to do, because now we've got many members coming forward supporting this initiative, and last night's count was over 30 members now supporting this, and more are coming in. So that's positive. With that momentum going, we believe now we're going to have the capabilities to sustain, to do the workloads, because as we know, the workloads are drastic. So that's where we are at this stage. I'm going to close it there and open it up for questions and answers.
One, two. Martin, thank you very much. Ron, Andrew, for the transcript. I really commend you. I commend you on developing this. I think that you've brought the same clear focus to it as you have always brought to the BC meetings, and I'm very pleased to see that you've narrowed the scope to strictly brand, service, trademark, and no generics, because it's what I refer to as a pure brand activity. And it's something that I, for one, really am happy to support. I think you've done an excellent job of pulling this together, and I congratulate you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron. I think just to be clear, Ron, the wording is currently excludes, because I think there's much wider debates going on out there, and you know there may be some synergies post that debate that we need to look at. So it's not a closed door, but it's certainly for now off the radar.
Thank you, Martin. It's Marilyn Cade. I am going to offer, from my personal point of view, perhaps a word of caution about two things that to just kind of examine. One would be, I'm sure you will have, because Philip is working with you, but the existing criteria to establish a new constituency has certain parameters to it, and some groups have failed the criteria to establish a constituency because they're not geographically diverse. So all I'm going to say is you need to look at the existing criteria to establish a constituency and then perhaps see if there's a rationale to seek a waiver to something that doesn't today make sense or, you know, that. And so I think you understand my point being about the geographic diversity issue. Secondly, I will say that while I'm very enthused about the idea of a .brands constituency in the contracted party house of brands that are focused specifically on their existing identity and it is associated with their trademark identity, I am very hopeful that companies like that, where the operation of a registry will be such a small portion of their focus, will continue to be actively engaged and contributing to the business constituency.
You, Martin.
He'll be sitting here until he agrees. But it's just a point that I think has been around the BC for quite a long time, and I just wanted to restate that. But I would have very strong concerns if we could not find a way to continue. It has nothing to do with your establishing the constituency, but I would have very strong concerns if we could not really continue to find the commonality of concerns about the consumer protection issues, et cetera, et cetera. And then finally, I would just say, I think we're almost going to have to think about one-page fact sheets to explain some things to the GAC on some on certain issues to the governments, because in the breakfast this morning, I think we were hearing some things that can be very confusing to them. They're not specialists. They come here. And so it may be that not just your slide deck, but, you know, an FAQ or something could be helpful.
Thanks, Marilyn. I think that was point one. Thank you for the advice taken. Two, yes, I can't. Well, personally, the risks and issues don't change for me as a business on the internet. In fact, they're going to get a lot worse, and I'm going to have to be using all the tools that we've asked for in the open commercial TLDs, so I can't see that being an issue. And I think I would encourage, you know, wherever businesses still have, you know, an interest and a concern, that they still have representation. How we work that out in terms of, you know, the actual detail to be done still, but yeah, duly noted. There was one other bit, I think, which was, sorry, your first bit about geographics.
Well, the thing about the first bit was, so I'll give you two specific examples. To be approved as a new constituency, you have to show geographic representation. But the other thing would be just an example within our own charter. We don't allow the same person to be the designated point of contact. So there may be things to think about in terms of you know, how you deal with that. The final point was just that the GAC, the governments, and maybe even some of us, are going to need the executive summary one-page version of some of what you are and what you're about, because it's easy right now for people to get a little confused.
Why don't we go ahead and hear from John and Susan, and then we should probably wrap this portion up because we're going to be hearing from Aparna, who will lead us on a discussion about defending the multi-stakeholder model. But go ahead, John, and
sure.
Then Susan.
This is John Berard. So I was in the GAC meeting when you made Philip and Jay Scott made the presentation, and it was a good first step, but you've probably already figured out how you need to sharpen and make more clear the shared interests that the brand registries and the GAC have. Maybe it was just hot. I don't know. I say maybe it was just hot in the room, that kind of thing. But the application for a new constituency, it's a chicken and an egg. The brand-specific registry agreement, the brand registry, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Politically, one probably enhances the other. I don't know, and I will watch closely how you handle that. The other thing is your application for a new constituency will be made to the stakeholder group that you seek to join, and so I guess my question is, how are the legacy registry members, registry stakeholder members, reacting to your initiative?
Okay, I'll take the last question then. I don't think there's been a great deal of engagement yet in that respect, so wait to see. But what I would say that this isn't just the brand registry group looking at similar things. As I walk past this room, I've seen a slide where there's other interest groups formed that expect to then fit in as constituencies in that same stakeholder group. So it's certainly not a surprise to anybody, but there needs to be that engagement and consideration as these get pushed through, because, you know, to answer to some of the points Marilyn raised, we do have to make sure that, you know, these are legitimate reasons to going in to create a constituency. There's an awful lot of effort and work that will need to go into reshaping everything. So we do need to be aware of the sensitivities, the concerns, but we've also got to do something. Was there an earlier question or was it a statement?
Just an observation.
I'll leave it as that. Thank you.
Susan?
Are you sure? What do you envision the transition of a TLD if the brand owner decides they don't want to be in the domain name business anymore? What's the solve for that?
Shut it down.
The main thing here, and perhaps I didn't make that clear earlier on, is that there are domains, so we're not harming any third party as a registrant, and it's very much like our businesses. Sometimes we have to close branches because it's not viable to keep them open, and you shut those down. But it would have to be something that you manage just as you would do with any closure of business.
Yeah, I would agree.
But that the it rests on your shoulders in terms of how you deal with that and how you communicate to your customers and consumers.
Could add to that. The BC's official position on that was that if it's a single registrant TLD and you own them all, whether it's your trademark or a generic word, if you own them all, you ought to be able to terminate, and ICANN should not be able to transition that to anyone else without your consent. You may consent to it, but other than that, ICANN shouldn't get to it.
Well, thank you, Martin. That was very, very helpful. So at this point, I would like to see if we can pause the recording because this section will be a closed session, section rather. And I think Aparna was going to lead us through a discussion.